Up next, the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark, brought to you by Veranda High Point.
Good evening, sports fans, and thanks for tuning in to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. I'm your host, Mark, coming to you live here from Broomfield, Colorado, where it's way too hot for this time of the year. And on the phone, we have my co-host, JP, currently coming to us live from Philadelphia. JP, how are things going out there?
Yeah, I am. I'm a little bit north of Philadelphia. I'm up in the Pocono Mountains, where it's about 56 degrees and very cool out right now. I know you're eating your heart out for this one.
But I'm great, sure.
Great college football games on today, man. We have great college football games on right now. We have like top 10 matchups right across the board, all across the board as we speak. So we're looking forward to talk some NFL football tomorrow and some preview.
And we would just like to remind everyone that we are available both on Facebook and on Twitter. If you could like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Both of those places you can find us with the at symbol, the SPT Offensive. You can also call into the show if you want to talk to us live. The number here is 929-477-3204. Again, 929-477-3204. You can listen to us live on Blog Talk Radio tune in live. You can also catch us on demand on both iTunes and iHeartRadio applications. We would like to bring in our secondary host here, the McMahon to our Johnny, the Barney to our Fred, the Peel to our Keith, South Dakota Nate Dog. Nate, how are you doing this afternoon?
What's up, guys? It's like to have a little special show on Saturday night. And, yeah, JP's right. There's some great football games going on. Excited for tomorrow. A lot going on with baseball. It's a great time of year, gentlemen.
Yeah, it's always an exciting time when you've got so many sports going on. You've got both college and football, NFL football, you know, just blossoming and starting out. You've got baseball zeroing in on the postseason. We're down to 20 games. We're down to just a little bit under 3 weeks. And it's going to be an exciting drive towards the pennant for sure. One thing that did come up today, and JP, I definitely wanted to give you the first comment on this because this is kind of an interesting development. But that there's now been a memo obtained by a newspaper that Joe Paterno was made aware of Sandusky's inappropriate actions three different times. And I wonder if, like, is there a point where it becomes concerned that Paterno didn't do enough, or does it not really matter at this point, you think, because he's no longer with us?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've seen a couple different articles about the Joe Paterno, and he was told about it. Here's what I got to say. The man died of cancer right after they fired him. Leave him alone. You know what? He reported it to the president of the university. The president went to the state police. The state police didn't have enough evidence to actually go after anybody. So just leave Joe Paterno alone. That's what I say about it. You know, everybody wants to hit Joe Paterno, but Joe Paterno went to the president of the university, and the president went to the state police. And I'm getting sick of hearing this from people that want to make Joe Paterno just the bastard child of anything, and he's not. He did so much for the children in Pennsylvania, building libraries. Him and Patty Paterno, his wife, built libraries at Penn State. He gave back half of his salary to put into educational systems here in Pennsylvania. So I hate hearing stuff like this. So that's my opinion. I know it's my opinion. I am in PA right now, so I'm a little bit biased. I'm going to Penn State next weekend. I'm a little bit biased. So, you know, Nate, I want to hear your thoughts and Mark your thoughts too.
So,
well, Nate, go ahead.
Mark just told me about it. I haven't read the article or anything. I really don't know the specifics of it. I guess if he told the president, then to me it's kind of in their hands. I feel like there's not much more he could have done. I guess he could have fired the guy, but I don't know. It's such a fickle thing when there isn't evidence. You know, I mean,
actually,
Nate,
he actually was already left the Penn State facilities. He was actually already let go. He was doing this in his charity for inner city kids, but Penn State donated the facilities for him to do it in. So he was already not on the staff. That's the whole thing. They let him go, and then he did it at his facilities.
Okay.
Right, and I think the only concern that really has come up is, number one, is that did it take more than one incident of being notified before Paterno went to the president of the university, which I don't know the answer to that. I'm saying I think that's why it's still a concern to some people. And I think But if you knew about an accusation of any kind, and then you continued to allow the gentleman to use the facility when you knew it was going to be minors around, then I think there is some culpability there. Again, I'm not stating, I'm speculating as to why people are still, why the story is still kicking around.
Right. And, you know, people really shouldn't be poking around that. It's been rectified. It's been justified. I mean, we've had Sandusky's in jail. He's a pedophile. I hate the guy. He's in jail, and he's going to rot in jail, and I'm glad he's going to rot in jail. So I think everyone needs to get over it and just move on.
Yep, I would say that it just comes down to, I think, whether or not the person that kind of spilled all the beans, I kind of get the feeling that because he was also purportedly a victim, that I think that it's impossible for him to let it go, and that he may look at it as when the story has died down to jump right back on it to make it back to the front because of the pain that has been experienced by that person. That's the best I can consider. But, of course, we do live in an age where media is looking for anything that they can get for clickbait and to cause emotion. And anytime kids are involved, emotion will be part of it. And I think that that's probably a big reason why you're still going to hear these stories for a while.
Yeah, you're 100% right on that one. And you're going to keep hearing stories like that no matter what. You know, we can go – I mean, look at our Browns, former Baylor coach. He got hired for one day in the CFL and got fired the next day. You know, that guy's never going to coach again. You know, now that's a whole different story where sexual assault was happening under his reign and he knew about it. But, you know, we can go on and on about this. I mean, it's just, it's unfortunate that we have to talk about stuff like this, you know, but we have to bring it up. We have to be socially correct and so on and so forth.
So, you know, speaking of sexual, like, you know, misconduct, I'm sure most of you know out there who are listening, there's a host that was on Fox News, was pretty popular. His name was Eric Bolling. I think he was on that show, The Fox. I'm sure I don't watch Fox, but I know he was a pretty popular person on the station. And he got let go for making, I guess, some lewd comments in text that were not reciprocated and not asked for, I guess, like a married person, and he sent her some sexually suggestive text. She didn't, like, respond or have any interest in that.
I think
and,
it was dick pics, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? So he pulled a wiener on her?
He pulled a wiener on his wiener?
In more than one way?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of Anthony Wiener, but, you know. Well, that's
a wiener on his wiener.
Yeah, so he got fired. So, but the reason I'm bringing it up, and this is because it's a local story, his son attended school at CU, I guess, right now. And he's died. And as of right now, they haven't said why, and I guess they're saying there's no sign of self-harm at this point. They're going to have an autopsy next week. And so anyway, but just because of the fact that it's CU Boulder is a very – I mean, it's very close to he actually also was studying economics at CU, which is what I got my degree in, so that also caught my eye. So, obviously, it's horrible to see that happen, but, you know, that is a local issue that went on. So, what's going on?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just watching college football with some friends here, and, you know, we got the USC game on, Stanford game on right now. Which is, you know, we got a lot of good games on tonight. It's a great day for college football.
I think almost
Ohio
all
State
weeks seem to be
Oklahoma game.
you're watching Oklahoma as well as baseball? That's hard to
yeah.
do.
I got what's this? Quadruple screens.
Ah, you can do different channels?
Yeah, I got I can do up to 4 different things on one screen.
Oh, you got this then.
Yeah, I got this.
Yeah, you can do the quadruple screens. Yeah, I mean, we got a great game here with USC and Stanford right now, 21-14 USC. And we got great games all across the board here.
Who's winning that Ohio State game?
That's a really good question right now. Who's winning
Ohio? 3-3 at halftime.
That's the last I saw. I haven't checked that one out because it was at the half. It was 3-3. I didn't know if they kicked off the
Ohio
second half.
Ohio State just scored, so it's 3 over Oklahoma. So so good matchup there. Got Clemson up 14-6 on Auburn.
Yep.
Penn State, I believe, rolled pretty significantly this morning. Is that correct?
Yeah,
yep,
they did. They should have looked a little bit better, but it is an old school. It's an old school rivalry game for Penn State. I mean, they haven't played. Last year was the first time in 16 years they played, so this is the second time in 17 years they played. It was at Beaver Stadium. They rolled pretty good. I will be at the Georgia State game. It's going to start 7:30 tomorrow. Saturday night. I'm going to be out in State College. I'm going to give you the full State College report. Friday night parties and Saturday morning brunch, and you know, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait to actually broadcast from Penn State.
What is the most popular dish at a Pennsylvania brunch?
All right, I heard 2 people talking right there.
I was just going to ask you what the most popular dish was at a Pennsylvania brunch.
I will be eating about 21 pieces of bacon.
That sounds right to me.
That's what I do. 21 pieces.
I don't know if you were both there at a bachelor party that we had. It was a bachelor weekend, actually. And the first morning we were there after the first night of heavy drinking, the entire breakfast was bacon. And I believe we had 3 plates that were piled about 1.5 feet high of bacon strips. And it did well soaking up that boost because we had to go to a beer festival that afternoon. So, you know,
yeah.
If you're looking for a cure, that's where you go. Well, I think you have to be of a certain age, though. I think at our age, I don't think it works anymore. So, moving up real quick to baseball, we do have a couple of things to talk about that are very interesting. Now, number one is that Giancarlo Stanton hit his 54th home run. So we're about, 2019 games away from the end, I believe. Where do you think he ends up?
Nate, I'm going to let you take this one first, and I'll go second.
Yeah, I think he ends up where I said last time we talked about it, at 55. I think he only hits one more, maybe 2.
Interesting.
Okay.
JP?
I'm going to go with 57. 57 is the mark I think he's going to set. He's going to come up just shy of 61. I think he hits 57 home runs. And, you know, that's going to be the new benchmark for non-PED use is 57.
So I think he hits 7 more home runs. He'll put him at 61. So I don't think he breaks Harris' record. I think he ties it. I do agree that if he hits 62, I think most people are going to consider Giancarlo Stanton the home run king, the true home run king. It may not be that way in the books, but I think it'll be that way in people's minds. What do you guys think, Nate?
If he gets to 62, absolutely. I think that's what people are going to recognize. I mean, all those years with Sosa and McGuire and Bonds, it's so tainted. And I just think that, the 62 is going to be the one that people look at moving forward if he does get to that mark.
JP, you think I think that it'd definitely be recognized as a home run champ in most circles?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Nate on that. I mean, when you take the asterisk out and you put him in, if he hits 62, you have to look at the benchmark, you know, non-PED use. I mean, we knew the steroid and PED use of all Sosa, the McGuires, and everybody, and Bonds. And if Stanton can get there, I mean, that's going to be the benchmark. I mean, that's going to be the real benchmark because these players are tested. Unless they're using substances you can't detect,
which we don't know. And I honestly, quite frankly, you know, there's always substances you can't detect, and everyone's out to try to do something. But I think Stan is a clean guy, and if he hits 62, he's going to be the king.
You know,
it brings up a lot of interesting things for me, I don't want to take a lot of time with this because it'll take us off on a million different tangents. But, you know, I don't know when the curveball really was invented, you know, because Ruth hit 60 in, what was it, 27? And then Maris hit 61 and 61, I believe. And, you know, you look at all the different things, you know, those guys, you know, back when Ruth was playing, it was pretty much fastballs. You know, they may have had a spitball or something in there, but it was much fastballs.
And it was all
white guys too playing. You know, none of the Negro leagues were even, I don't even know if they were going in the '20s just yet. They might have.
Oh,
been.
The Negro leagues were already going. Yeah, they were already going.
Okay.
They
kind of
were like, they were barnstormers.
Weren't even, you know, out there pitching against Babe. So what I'm getting at here is all the different factors that play into the 62. And, you know, him doing that today, in today's game, the way the ball is wound, the way the pitchers are, and the competition and all those different things just makes it really impressive.
It really does. You hit it right. You hit it right on that. When Maris did it in 61, the pitching wasn't as good. They're not throwing as hard. They're not throwing as many pitches or, you know, different pitches. You know, they're not throwing sliders, curveballs, this, that, the other thing, knuckleballs, whatever it is. But, I mean, Stan is just crushing everything right now. And you just, even if he doesn't hit that, you have to look at that PED mark and go back and look at Maris's mark and say, wow, he's really doing something special.
He is, and now I don't want to sell Babe Ruth too short because the first curveball was thrown in 1967 by Candy Cummings, so the curveball was definitely around for a good 40 years by the time Ruth showed up. Now, whether or not it had the same movement and whether or not there were so many different kinds of curveballs, because if you're going to say it's an off-speed pitcher, a curveball, I mean, a curveball could be anything that causes the ball to move. You've got sliders, you've got screwballs, you've got sinkers, you've got slurves now and sliders and all that kind of thing. So I don't know exactly when all those pitches came around, but I do think that the fact that only white people were allowed to play the game did factor in quite a bit. But I also wonder if limiting of the competition in that regard also was a hindrance on the number of people or players available to hit those numbers. So maybe it kind of correlates itself correctly and keeps it consistent. I know Nate used to be a big fan of playing some of those simulation baseball programs, and one of them was What If Sports. And, you know, oftentimes you would look at the teams that would win, and they wouldn't look like the best team on paper, but that the way that a league was configured based on the amount of money that could be spent or the years it could be used, it changes the way that things, like the probability of things against each other. So I don't know if that might go into it or not, but I think it's at least an interesting, you know, way to look at it because, you know, I know that we've played a few of those leagues myself and it was always kind of confusing.
Yeah.
But you know, it was definitely a fun thing to do. Now, I do bring up that Yu Darvish has broken the record for being the fastest starter to ever 1,000 strikeouts. Now, I don't think that that's a hugely significant thing, but I bring it up because he pitches for the Dodgers. He lost that game 5-4, blowing a 3-run lead, as he has not pitched that well since his first start, oftentimes imploding when he gets past the fifth inning. And into the fact that the Dodgers have lost, I think, 12 of 13 or 13 of 14. They were 1-9 in their last 10. They're so far ahead, it's not likely that they're going to not make playoffs at this point because they'd have to fall 10 more games within 20 games left to play, which is very hard to do. But I just got to ask, does anybody have any idea What's wrong with the what's wrong with the Dodgers? JP, you want to go first?
Well, I was going to ask you this. What is your concern? Being a Dodger fan, what are your concerns right now looking at this losing streak heading into October? I mean, we're in the beginning of September, but we got a month to play here, and then we get to the playoffs. How concerned are you, you know, being that's your team? You know, my Phillies are way out of it. So, you know, how concerned are you with all of this? And I haven't watched the Dodger game, but I keep seeing these scores where they're losing. And I'm like, what is wrong with the Dodgers? Bellinger's back, right? He didn't get hurt again, right? Yeah. So, I mean, what really is wrong with the Dodgers right now?
Well, the problem with the Dodgers is the same problem that any team that's not doing well has, and that is you're giving up more runs than you're scoring. And
right.
For the first time in a long time, the Dodgers are giving up a lot more runs than scoring. In fact, they are no longer over 200 in the run differential, and they are no longer in first place in the run differential as Cleveland has taken over that spot. And in terms of how worried I am exceedingly worried. I would say the way they're playing right now, if they got caught in the buzzsaw of going against Arizona, I don't think they can beat them. I think it would be a close series against the Cubs, and I think they could still handle the Nationals because I feel like the Nationals, unless they get Bryce Harper back in full form, are a bit of a defeated
right.
themselves. But
yeah, they're a little depleted, yeah.
Nate?
My take on this is everybody gets so concerned anytime a good team goes on a bad streak like this. It's such a small sample size. You know, it's a 162-game season. We've seen what the Dodgers can do over the first 135 games, and they're an amazing team. It's a long season. Every good team, I don't care how good they are, has a bad streak at some point. It just happens that theirs is happening now at the end of the year. They're still a fantastic team. They're going to figure things out by the time the playoffs start, and they're going to make the World Series.
Well, this is the wrong time for it to happen, though. If you want your bad streak, it's usually the beginning of August, historically, in baseball, when your bad streak comes, and you want to be going forward at the end of August and September, when you're pushing forward. I mean, that's when a lot of teams made those runs, you know, to the World Series, so.
No,
well,
I hear you. It is bad timing, but they still have 2 to 3 weeks. The chances that a team that good is going to continue to play this poorly for another 3 weeks isn't very good. So I think they'll figure it out in the next week or so, and they'll be fine. And then they're going to go into the playoffs and do really well. I think Washington's the only team that poses any sort of risk to them. So.
Well, I'm certainly hopeful on that. I'd like to see them do well. I do think that at least it's happening now, because if this happened, you know, 2 weeks later, it would be really dangerous. I think you're right. The odds of them still playing poorly for the next 19 games is kind of low. And if they do, they might not make the playoffs at all. It would be crazy. Also, you can see Colorado and Arizona go to the playoffs instead of the Dodgers.
Oh, that would be absolutely craziness. I mean, if they blew that lead, it's not going to happen. I mean, just let's put it out there. That's not going to happen. That would be crazy.
No way.
It is very interesting that on the boards, on like on ESPN and whatnot, when they talk about the, you know, how things have been going, it's amazing to read the Dodger fans. And I mean, I'm sure plenty of the people are trolls like any other message board, but how many people are calling for Dave Roberts' head is just baffling to me. It's like, we had Mattingly before, who took great teams and made them average, and David Roberts has come in and done an excellent job so far. This season had them playing better than they've played in 100 years, and now they're going through a 2 or 3 week lull. That's a really crazy to blame a manager and think that a manager is doing something to cause that kind of a losing streak. I just think that maybe they got so unbelievably hot that when they had their market correction, they became incredibly bad. And hopefully they'll just come out into an even deal at the end and be able to do something in the playoffs. There's nothing really else that we can hope for at this point because, it still looks really ugly.
Well, Mark and Nate, I mean, we all know those are stupid fans. People that do that at this point of the season, they're not knowledgeable of baseball, because baseball is streaky. You go on streaks. It's going to happen. The Dodgers on a hot streak the whole season, and now they came to a cold streak. It's a streaky game. They're going to get it back. They're going to make – yeah, the Dodgers are fine. They have a great team, and they're fine.
Yeah. No, I'm just hoping. That's the best we can do at this point, and just, you know, think that they can still stay afloat. So on the opposite end of that spectrum, we have the Cleveland Indians, which are now, as of today, the seventh team since 1961 to win 17 straight games.
Incredible. Incredible.
17 straight games.
Yes, that's incredible.
Absolutely shocking that a team can do that. Just, you know, it makes you start thinking back to the Oakland Athletics, to the Moneyball year. Right? They had 20 or 21, I think 20, maybe it's 22, I don't really remember. But
I think it was 20.
Yeah, so do you think Cleveland breaks the A's record? Do they get 21?
Yeah.
Phew.
Yes.
Who's their home stand? My computer's not connected to the internet right now. Who's their home stand against? Or who are they playing right now?
They just beat the Orioles 4-2 today.
Ooh,
and that's who they have tomorrow.
Right. That's a tough one. I'll tell you what, they're going to come close to it. I'm not sure if they're going to break Billy Bean's record, but – and I say Billy Bean's record, but – I mean, because he was the mastermind of Moneyball.
But you know who they play after that is Detroit, and Detroit has basically shipped off every good player they have.
Yeah, I know.
I was just going to say, tomorrow is a big game. If they win tomorrow, I think they get the streak.
Is Bundy pitching tomorrow?
No, it's Bauer for Cleveland versus Hellickson for the Orioles.
Okay.
So they're not facing a real good pitcher going forward until they face Vargas of Kansas City. So they've got a real good shot, but it's not just about who you're playing. It's also the fact that it's just really hard to win a game anyway, and certainly hard to win back-to-back games, and certainly hard to win multiple games back-to-back.
Now the pressure is on them because everyone's thinking about the record. They're talking about the record. That's when the pressure really comes. And now all the pressure is on them to break the record. So, you know what? They're going to give it a run. I can guarantee you that. If they're going to get it, they're going to get it. They're going to give it a run. I'll go that far. 22, you say 20 or 21?
I think it's 20.
I'm pretty sure 20 is the record.
Okay. That's really hard to do in baseball.
Yeah.
Only done once, so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see next week. You know, I'll be coming live from State College, Pennsylvania next week at our normal time at 11:30 Eastern, 11 Eastern, 9 o'clock Mountain Time. And, we'll see if they get to that landmark. I mean, if any team's going to do it, the Indians could do it.
So since we're hitting like the one-third point of our show tonight, we're only on for an hour and a half tonight, everyone. Again, our call-in number here is 929-477-3204. You can catch us on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, iHeart Radio, TuneIn Radio, and on Twitter if you want to call in and show. I do want to give out a quick review. I went and saw the movie It today. It's a pretty highly anticipated film. I would say if you enjoyed The Goonies, then you'll really enjoy It, because it's essentially The Goonies but in a horror film. And it's kind of like a throwback horror film where it's not trying to just be disgusting or just make you jump like the movies are now in the horror genre. It's more of a trying to kind of build some tense moments and anticipation and things like that. They did update it to be 1980 for the time when the kids are around, which in the book about 1960. And we should also point out that this is the first movie in either a duology or a trilogy, and it is just the kid portion of the book. It doesn't have any actions that take place as adults. But again, if you enjoyed Goonies, I think this will be a movie that you'll really enjoy. So
I'll tell you what, Mark. So you like sausage and egg McMuffins in the morning when I come up to the TSO North Studios. How many sausage and egg McMuffins do you give it out of five?
I'd have to give it 4.5.
4.5. Wow, that's a big
sausage
egg McMuffin.
I really enjoyed
it.
I felt like it did a good job of staying somewhat close to the source material. There's a few things I would prefer they stayed even closer, but you know what? Directors just mostly aren't willing to make a carbon copy of the book, no matter how much people who like the books would like to see that happen. Not quite Harry Potter level, but they did do a good job. So, like I said, if you like the Goonies, I'd go ahead and recommend you go ahead and see it. And it's a fun movie while being a horror film, but not like a scary horror film or an icky one.
Right.
So, talking about winning streaks and losing streaks, Arizona just recently ended a 13-game winning streak. So another loss.
Yes,
streak.
They did. Yes.
How disappointing do you think they felt to win 13 games in a row and still be 10 games out of first place?
Nate, go ahead on that one. I'm going to let you go first. Nate? Did we lose Nate?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'll bring him on right now. Sorry about that. Nate, can you hear
us? Well, that's my
bad. Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't see that it dropped.
No problem. So, yeah, there's a lot of hot teams right now. And Arizona, I think they already had chalked up the division going to the Dodgers. So, you know, to be able to play that well and show the Dodgers that they can match up with them was a big statement. You know, sweeping them. And the other hot team right now is Houston, who has they won 7 in a row up until today. And then
they lost
2 in a row? Okay. But either way, they've been hot as well. So a lot of good teams right now. But yeah, the Diamondbacks, I mean, they've kind of taken a commanding lead with that wild card slot. So they're most likely going to get a home game.
I think what we'll do for next week's trivia question, I forgot to have one for this week. Next week's trivia question should be, in any year, has one division had the two best records in baseball? And I don't know if that's possible, but if Arizona were to go on another winning streak, I don't think that they could take over both the Nationals and the Astros. But, I mean, how crazy would it be? They're only about 5 games behind both of them. How crazy to have both the best two records in baseball come out of the same division?
Yeah, that'd be amazing. It's probably happened maybe a couple other times. But,
I mean, when it was when they had only the two divisions in each league, I could see it when there was less teams.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing since they've gone to a 6-division format that's never happened. I don't know that for sure, but that would sure surprise me. Moving on to
Mark.
Go ahead.
I've got a good trivia question. If you want me to throw it out,
yeah, go ahead.
We can answer
Rock and roll.
We can answer it at the end of the show. And I think I've discussed this with you before, so you probably know the answer, but only one guy ever in the NBA has got 2 quadruple doubles.
So, in one season or in career?
No, in their career.
Now, you said the NBA, quadruple doubles.
Yes, and that can be
steals.
It can be either steals or blocks. As the fourth category. It's happened a few times, a number of times, but only one player has done it twice in their career.
Really? I don't think I knew that one.
Okay. I got the answer.
I've got my first guess actually right now.
Oh, okay.
Well, hold it until the end of the show. So
yeah, we'll hold it until
the end of the show.
I wrote it down, so.
All right.
Cool. Moving on to everyone's favorite sport, the sport that dominates everything in the world. Let's see. NFL has its opening game on Thursday, and the Patriots, who are the Super Bowl champions, faced off against, I think, the wild card team, Kansas City Chiefs from last year.
Yeah.
So, JP, just in like five sentences, just tell me your brief description of what happened in that game.
Okay, sentence number one. I love your Facebook post. You're giving the Kansas City Chiefs too much at 13 points. That's my first sentence. Boy, were you wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll tell you what. Kansas City is going to be the team that kills the Broncos this year, I think. After watching that game, I hate saying it, Trevor Siemian cannot match up against something like that. The Broncos D, as good as it is, I think that offense is going to be better, and I think the Broncos are going to fall right where I thought they would fall, maybe at 8-8 or 6-10 again, or 7-9, somewhere in that range. Kansas City looked really good. Andy Reid always puts a good football team on the field. So that's my five sentences. I look at the coaching of Andy Reid. I mean, Bill Belichick got out coached in that game. Tom Brady got out and played in that game. And the Patriots as a whole got out and played in that game.
That's way more than five sentences. I'm just messing with you. Go ahead, Nate. Give me your five sentences.
Well, did you guys see the beginning, the opening? They had a big hubbub going on for the Patriots, obviously, because of the Super Bowl. And, you know, Edelman was holding up the trophy and all that.
And it was completely unpatriot-like.
Yeah, and there's, you know, a lot of writers were, you know, in the local New England area were writing about 19-0 this year. And there's just a lot of hype surrounding the Patriots. So I think they were just overconfident and didn't see what was coming. I do think that was Alex Smith's best game ever as a pro. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. I think he completed over 80% of his passes, four touchdown passes. I mean, I don't even think he had four touchdown passes to a receiver a couple of years ago in the whole year. So,
they had no receivers caught a touchdown pass one year.
Yeah, so that was unbelievable. I do think that I feel terrible for whoever the Patriots play this coming weekend, because they're going to freaking destroy them. And I think Kansas City now is going to be overrated for the next couple weeks. I think they're a good team, but I don't think they're that good. The rookie Hunt looked like he might be the real deal. And
I'll tell you what, 246
Tyreek Hill was unbelievable. So, but they definitely have a lot of weapons there. But I just don't think, you know, with Eric Berry was kind of the story of the game. He was unbelievable. But then now he's out for the season, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, he's out. Torn Achilles.
He might be the best safety in the league. So that's going to hurt them big time.
Well, many people say he's the best safety in the league. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a tough division. I think, in my opinion, that's the toughest division this year, is that AFC West. Unfortunately, I think the Broncos are the worst team in the division.
Yeah, I have to second that one. I don't see Siemian taking the promised land with that team. I don't see it. That defense is on the older end of the defense. And, you know, I hate saying this about the Broncos, but I just don't see it coming by any means. I don't think they match up well with their schedule. Well, I mean, we went over the schedule before. So I don't think they match up well with the schedule with Siemian and the whole nine yards.
You don't hate to say that. You love to say that. Come on, be honest. So
I hate saying that. Hey, you know what? We all have a good time. When the Broncos win, we're all downtown. We're partying. And it's a great time.
I tell you what, we'll make sure to mark the occasion the next time you compliment the Broncos on our show, because I can't remember the last time.
Oh, come on now.
Just saying. So my five sentences for this game are, number one, Brady looks like he's 40. I don't think that'll continue, but if he had connected on that initial pass to the tight end out in the flat, or not in the flat, but up on up, you know, out in the flat and then up the sideline. No, it wasn't the Gronk. It was whoever the other guy is. But the guy was wide open, and Brady threw it over his fingertips. And if he connects on that pass, I think he gets on a better roll, and it's just kind of a walloping that goes on. I think also that the Patriots – I'll say second sentence is Patriots couldn't convert fourth down or one-yard situation.
No. It was three times, I think.
And oddly enough, they didn't use the Brady sneak that's worked for him for the last 7 to 8 years. I thought that was interesting. Number three, I would say losing Hightower and having a defense that is a lot of new parts that are not used to working together yet, that was the most unpatriot defense I've ever seen in my life. And I think losing Hightower was just the straw that broke the camel's back. I think they'll get better
on that.
Patriots know how to get better during the season, but that defense was nothing close to what we see from any kind of a Belichick team. It was very undisciplined.
They're terrible.
Number four to me is Alex Smith played the single greatest game of his life. I've never seen him look like a number one pick. I've never seen him look like a leader. I've never seen him look like anything resembling a great quarterback. He looked almost like Joe Montana in that game, and I think that reason alone is going to have people way overblowing what happened and think the Chiefs are some kind of a great team now. I think he goes back to who he was next week and for the rest of the season, and the Chiefs again finish with about 9 wins because that's about how good their talent level is. Now, losing Eric Berry, which is sentence number five, he was massive in this game. Two of the fourth down one conversions that they failed were because Berry made the hit behind the line of scrimmage. Losing him on a defense that has had a talent drain the last couple of years is a disaster. I think that could send them into a tailspin, and if they can't figure out a way to compensate for what he does in terms of leadership in big-time situations and big-time moments, I think 9-7 might be tough, and they might be looking at 6-10. But if they don't have any other serious injuries, they might be okay if Hunt has enough stamina to make it to the end of the season. So question number one is, are the Patriots in trouble? Are the Chiefs going to dominate? Or will everything normalize kind of where is at the start of the season by the time we get to the playoffs?
Okay.
That's a lot of questions.
I'll tell you what. We got a shootout at the Horseshoe. Oklahoma just scored. Baker Mayfield just threw a touchdown pass. Wow, we have great football. So getting back to your question here. One, do I think the Patriots are going to go back to normal? Yes, they will. They're going to learn to play together. They're going to be fine. They're in a really horrible division with the Jets. I mean, the Dolphins with Gase and Cutler again. I mean, that's his best season ever. I could see them doing something, but they're not. Historically, the Patriots play bad in Miami, but, I mean, after this hurricane, is Miami even going to exist anymore? I have no idea. They could get wiped off the map. I think the Patriots are fine. Two, I think the Chiefs are fine. Barry is a really big loss to them. That defense is going to take a hit. Make no mistake about it. But the Raiders are clearly the favorite in that division right now.
So in fantasy purposes, Hunt obviously had what you would call a pretty good day, right? I mean, he scored more than a pretty good day. Kind of a shocking – in one of my leagues, 47, and another league, about 51. So here's my question. Does Hunt score 51 or 47 points in whatever that league is in the next 2 weeks combined? I say no. Nate?
Who do they play?
Oh, you would ask that question. Give me a second here.
I'm not connected to the internet, so you're going to have to tell me.
Wow, somehow I got on Spanish. Let me get out of the portes here. Yeah, I don't know how I did that.
I can tell you
this.
Jealousy, the running back for New England, scored scored 33 points in my fun league.
Yeah, he had three touchdowns.
I didn't know if I should start him or not. I mean, because it might have been running back by committee, but I think he just took over the starting spot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He looked solid.
He really did.
So the Patriots play versus the Eagles and at the Chargers the next 2 weeks.
No, we're talking about the Chiefs, I thought.
Oh, I said Chargers. I'm sorry. The Chiefs play against the Eagles and then at the Chargers the next two games.
Yes.
Okay, then yes, I think he does get four. I think he does have 47 combined.
Okay. And the other concern here would be that Gillislee looked fantastic for the Patriots in terms of getting most of the short line and goal line situations. I wish I had started him. He scored a good 25, 26 points. Do you think Gillislee is a legitimate number one running back in fantasy, or is he not going to usually get that kind of point coverage because the Patriots just do such different game plans every week?
Yeah.
Well,
you said the latter.
Yeah, you can never tell what Bill Belichick is going to put in his game plan. I mean, that's the biggest concern I have.
But, boy, that was quite a performance by Gillislee.
I think he'll be one of those frustrating players that you're going to have because you're not going to play him, and then he'll go off for 30, and then you're going to play him, and he'll score 4.
Yeah,
right,
sounds like most of the games that I have. So
I have a feeling that's
going to
be
interesting.
Yeah, they have so many players. I mean, it's just hard to say. Although, you know, if he shows up and does that again for another week or two, he could have a LeGarrette Blount 20 touchdown season. So
he could.
We'll
he could.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still shocking to me that they let LeGarrette Blount go like that. But maybe they just figured, you know what, in our system, we just need a certain type of running back, and they're going to do really well.
The Patriot system is always next man up.
It definitely is next man up. It definitely is.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up the fact that, I've been a long-time customer of a certain gambling site, and Bovada is not offering to do the – I think it used to always be a 100% double up to $200 of your first deposit of the year for football. And they're not offering it this year. So I'm considering going to BetUS. They have offered me that deal. Now, I think that the spreads on Bovada are sometimes a little bit better in terms of the negative, like negative 140 or negative 150 for a certain game. I think it's usually a little bit lower than on BetUS.
Okay.
But I'm just really perturbed that they took away that bonus that they have every year. So I was going to say, if any of our listeners out there happen to know of a good site or have a preference, please feel free to call in or post on our Twitter feed. I'd like to know who you use for gambling because I am not going to use Bovada after they have pissed me off so much with this not doubling my entry fee.
Yeah, that's kind of bogus.
You know, but in the past, they also – I don't know if they are doing this anymore, but – it used to be if you bet $100 every week for all 17 weeks that they would give you $200 at the end of the season.
They didn't do that last year, I don't believe. I think they did that 2 years ago.
Yeah, they did it 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I got that 2 years ago. I think that these are just little things where they, you know, they did these things to grow their site to a big site, and now Bovada is one of the biggest ones. So I think they're like, oh, we don't have to give out these niceties anymore. So you know, that's when you pick up your bags and you take your money somewhere else.
I think we're gonna have to start studying up a little bit on our fantasy, and we might have to do a little daily fantasy.
You know, someone told me about a newer site that's not either the FanDuel or the DraftKings, which now seem to be completely fixed in terms of, only the big-time people can win. They're supposedly they have their smaller games or their non-pros games, but, you know, who the hell knows is in there. But my buddy did tell me about another smaller company that does them. It doesn't have the people that are using those algorithms and things so much in it. And so I thought about trying that. But, you know, single-week fantasy is really hard in football. And
yes,
for all the people that have told me, you know, they have okay success at it, I'm like, so how many years have you ended up plus money? They're like, well, never. You know, so it's like, well, you're not doing that well. If you just survive to the end, you could just say, hey, here's $50. I'm not going to do more than $5 a week, you know?
Yeah, it's too difficult. It's too difficult. I mean, I think the key, you just have to get lucky one time and hit it big. I mean, that's
right.
Really,
you
gotta
hit that.
You
gotta hit that $10 receiver who goes off for 45 points.
Yes.
You know,
and
you pick that guy,
it's interesting.
You're good to go.
I don't know if it's FanDuel or DraftKings this weekend, but they're doing a perfect lineup contest. And if you pick the top scorer at each position, you win $1 billion.
I think it's FanDuel.
How could they have $1 billion?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Because no one's going to do it.
Unless they say that, you know, that if you have to make a $20 deposit to do it, and so they get that many new customers for $20, I mean. But,
well, I think it's a $10. I think it might be a $10 game. I kind of forget it. So.
Oh, it's not free.
No, I don't think it is.
Oh, God, no. No, no, no. You got to sign up. I saw that commercial.
Yeah, I don't know.
I thought, you know, that might interest some of our listeners just to do a little bit every weekend on, you know, who we like for daily fantasy. It'd be kind of fun for us to do, I think.
Yeah, we could
definitely
pick a team for each show. I mean, I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, just see for fun if it won, but I doubt I'll ever give them money again.
Yeah.
So, looking at the games going forward to tomorrow, the biggest spread is Cleveland at a 9-point underdog playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers. What do you think? Would you? It's a negative 105 on Cleveland, a negative 115 on Pittsburgh.
Now,
who would bet in that game?
Real quick, are you sure it's not the Jets? I heard the Jets might be the biggest spread. Now, I don't know if that changed today. I have not looked.
8 points from what I see.
Okay, so they're 8 points. All right, so they went down. Oh, no.
Who are the Jets playing? Is it Buffalo?
Yes.
Right. Yes. In Buffalo.
Yeah.
So
how about in Buffalo?
That's only an 8-point spread.
I'd
take the favorite in that game with the Steelers. I just feel like Cleveland is, I don't know, man. They're just not there yet. I feel like they're doing everything right. They had a good draft last year, a really good draft this year. And I don't know. Their number one pick is out for the game. And I don't know. They got so many new moving parts there. I just don't see it's not going to gel. And not this early. And Pittsburgh got one of their weapons back. They're so deep on offense. And then they signed a great cornerback after Cleveland cuts him.
Right.
So,
no,
I mean,
Nate,
I think Pittsburgh is going to blow him out.
I agree with you, Nate. This game might be a 33-10 game, quite frankly.
Yes.
I mean, Pittsburgh's going to lay the metal on them because they got Martavis Bryant back, got Antonio Brown, best receiver in the NFL. You got Le'Veon Bell. And Big Ben. I mean, this game is going to get out of hand probably. Now, but Vegas puts these point spreads for something they know. Now, Nate, you know this because you've already clued me in on a couple bets that I made that I shouldn't have made. But, you know, something's up with that point spread.
Well, I mean, I think that they're just trying to find – you know how Vegas works. I mean, they're trying to get money on both sides to be the same.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of how they figure out the spread.
Yeah. No, I know that.
Yeah.
Still
so
amazing.
I don't know. I mean, it's so hard in the NFL now to have any spreads that are double digits because it is so competitive. Any team can win any given Sunday, as the saying goes. So to have a 10-point spread is, you know, it's hard to get people to bet on that other side of that.
Well,
so
look at the downside. Look at UNLV. They had a 45-point spread and they ended up losing their college football game.
Yes.
To I forget the college now. It's in D.C. But they lost.
It'll come to me. It's UNLV in the Mountain West.
Howard College.
Howard, that's it. Howard.
Yeah. I mean, we had two of the biggest upsets in the history of NCAA Division I football. I mean, Baylor loses to Liberty. UNLV gets beat by Howard. I mean, those are two of the biggest upsets. So, I mean, point spreads are point spreads. The NFL is a little bit more dialed in than college, but, I mean, you can see anything happen.
You know, if you had a $10 parlay bet on all seven of the biggest upsets last week, you'd have walked out of the casino with $2.2 million.
Yes. You're right.
I mean, I know
right.
Seven underdogs is almost impossible at those levels, but just for instance, you would have won a whole bunch of cash. So going into the Pittsburgh game, here's the big question. This is Le'Veon Bell coming in after a holdout, after missing most of training camp, after missing most of the preseason. I know he's got the talent. I know he's in good enough shape. But, boy, I tell you what, the last four or five high-profile players to do that did not have a good year when they came back into the NFL after holding out and missing those off-season activities. So for Le'Veon Bell, who is obviously one of the most explosive running backs in the game of football, most explosive players in football, let's put the number at an easy 21. Over-under for Sunday's game. Nate?
His fantasy points? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, 21 fantasy points over-under.
And this is a PPR league.
Oh, yeah, I just assumed PPR, sorry.
Yes, I'll take the over.
JP?
I'll take the over, too.
Interesting. Maybe because it's Cleveland that would happen. Otherwise, I would say no. But I think it's going to be really important to see what he does in that game and kind of predicting how his season's going to go going forward. Next biggest kind of noticeable spread is the Falcons and the Bears. Falcons at -7.
Now, this spread really surprises me because that's a lot closer than I would think, and I think that's because of the offensive coordinator going to the San Francisco 49ers that it's only 7 playing the Bears. I think this point spread should be a little bit higher on closer to 9 or 10.
Yeah, I thought that was a little interesting.
Yeah, it's a little interesting. So they're basically saying that you lost your offensive coordinator, Shanahan, and you're not going to be as good on offense, is what they're saying.
Well, they're also saying win by 7 points on the road, which is never an easy task, especially coming off of a Super Bowl hangover. So maybe
that's
they
true,
think,
that's true.
You know. You know, one of the things that did happen in football that has a big implication on the season, the divisions, and massive on fantasy is Ezekiel Elliott was granted his temporary injunction by the judge in his case. And what that means is until they are able to hear the case, then the decision is not valid yet. So the odds of them getting to this decision before the end of the season is pretty small. So now Elliott is back up to being a top 5, you know, overall fantasy preseason pick. It also adds a whole different element to the Cowboys for the full season. What do you want to change your prediction on the Cowboys record to now, assuming he does play the whole season? JP?
I'm going to keep it the same that I said before. I mean, 10-6, maybe. The whole NFC uploaded their rosters to beat the Cowboys, and they don't have a great record against the Giants. The Eagles usually split with them, and so on and so forth. I mean, I don't see them as a big of a threat, and I think Dak Prescott takes a step back and goes back to his college days where he throws a lot of interceptions, gets ruffled.
Well, yeah,
up.
But you've already gone over all that. I'm saying, do you think the record is now that they have Ezekiel for the whole season as opposed to when they didn't?
I think they stay the same. You know, it's still that offensive line is great, and Zeke doesn't get touched.
But you're saying that you don't think You don't think that, that the Cowboys win one additional game in those seven that Ezekiel will, or the six that Ezekiel plays?
Darren McFadden was an awesome running back, a Heisman candidate at Arkansas. So that was their backup. And then, Oklahoma just scored. I'm sorry. We have a shootout here at the Horseshoe. Oklahoma, Ohio State. Oklahoma just scored. They're going to be up 24-13 right now. Sorry to interrupt. But you know what? I still give them the same record because of that offensive. That offensive line is what makes that team go. It's not Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott isn't impressive. Ezekiel Elliott runs the ball, but you know what? Darren McFadden is as good as he's not as good as Ezekiel, but Darren McFadden came from Arkansas, Heisman candidate, Jerry Jones' favorite. He can do the job. But the same instance, you know what? It's Zeke. You're going to get to the third line of defense. Your safety, you're going to have to tackle him. I still give him the same record.
Nate, how about you?
I think they may win one more game with Ezekiel, but I think that's the only, it doesn't make it too big of a difference. I think he kind of has somewhat of a sophomore slump this year, and I just Dallas that defense is so bad.
They really are. I mean, now Mark, now they play the Broncos in week two. So what's your take?
Well, my take on the Broncos is very simple. It's been pretty much the same all the way through the preseason, as long as I knew Simeon would get the job. And that is, if their offensive line plays okay, the Broncos win 8. If the Broncos offensive line plays great, they win 10. If the Broncos offensive line plays like last year, they win 6. And I still think that's the case.
Right. Now I want to pose this question to you, just right off top. Do you realize the Broncos have their next starting quarterback on the roster already?
All right.
Mark?
You mean next week?
No, he's already on the roster. The next starting quarterback for the Broncos, already on the roster.
Are you saying that in Brock Osweiler, or are you saying that in terms of Paxton Lynch?
I'm saying in terms of Chad Kelly. He is the most pro-style quarterback on that team that you could ever imagine. Chad Kelly from Ole Miss, the draft pick, that's the next starting quarterback for the Broncos.
Well, I wish all the luck in the world to the Mr. Irrelevant.
You know what? Mr. Irrelevant is an awesome football player.
Well, let's hope so. I know his uncle is Jim Kelly, right? So,
yes.
You know, obviously he's got the pedigree, you know.
He's got
it's
the
just
pedigree.
About, but he's also not going to play this year. So,
no, he's not
going to
play this year. That's why I said the future quarterback. This future starting quarterback, he's on the roster already. We don't have to look anywhere else. You know, I know next year is the year of the quarterback coming out of college and running backs, but he's right there and he's ready to go. he got injured in training camp.
Just a quick question for both of you after watching the preseason, and I'm sure living in Denver, you probably had a chance to see more highlights than you would usually have a preseason. Do you think Paxton Lynch is a bust?
Nick, go ahead.
Do I think he's a bust? Yes.
I'm going to say yes, too. Yes, because he's not – his footwork has gotten better. He's not shortened his throwing motion at all. That's the biggest thing I can look at Paxton Lynch. His throwing motion is way too long.
Well, here's,
all I
here's
know
my
is
take.
He looks lost.
Yeah, and here's my take on it is if the Broncos have a good year this year and they make the playoffs, we will never see Paxton Lynch again. And
no,
he, you
you're,
know, not,
you're right.
Not,
you're
in
right.
A not in a Broncos uniform. So now if they are mediocre or bad, it's going to be the same scenario in camp again next year. It's going to be, you know, Paxton's going to get another shot. But
well, I bring this question up. Why did Elway took Chad Kelly for a reason, for an insurance purpose on Paxton Lynch?
Oh, absolutely.
Because Kelly is better than Lynch.
Well, we'll see. I mean, there might be a reason he was. I mean, he wasn't drafted to the last pick of the draft, so you know.
Right, right, and then that's because of
about
he punched. Well, no, he punched somebody at his brother's high school football game. That's why no one wanted to take him. He literally went to his high school or his brother's high school game and punched somebody.
Well, what about the AK-47 comment?
Oh, that too. Yes, yeah, you got
that
one too.
What was that?
The AK-47
yeah.
comment that he made.
Oh, I don't know. What was the comment? I don't remember.
I don't remember it verbatim.
I don't remember the. Yeah, I don't remember verbatim, but I know what you're talking about.
I'm going to go into that bar and shoot that guy up with the AK-47.
Yeah, not made great choices, and Jim Kelly's got to get him under wraps. And I think John Elway respects that he's a Jim Kelly's, you know, related to Jim Kelly, and Jim Kelly can help him. And under John Elway's tutelage, I think it's going to be great when it comes time.
Yeah, I think he's just a meathead. I think he's just kind of a meathead. Yeah. You know, if he can grow up a little bit, he'll probably be fine.
Well, hey, he went to Ole Miss.
Yeah. Well, that explains a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, they still wave the rebel flag as of 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So we also want to do a little bit of a review of our fantasy football league. We've talked about it on the program a number of times. It's the Fantasy Fanatics. We do play a PPR league. It's a how many years in are we now? Are we 15? Are we 20? We've got to be at least 15.
No, you guys are a long way.
We're in at least a dozen.
Yeah, I'd say at least a dozen. I'd say more than that, but at least a dozen.
Yeah.
So we had our draft last week, and we had our draft on Sunday afternoon, I believe it was. And it was an interesting draft. Now, in what I'm curious was, you know, maybe unethical work or something was going on there. Nate Dogg had the number one pick, and JP had the number two pick.
I did.
So I'm seeing some kind of shenanigans going on there. I might have the number five.
Hey, you know what? I drafted from PA at my friend's Hallie house in Reading, Pennsylvania. And I'll tell you what, man. When I got the second pick, I was ecstatic because I had no idea that you even picked yet.
I hope the Reading in Pennsylvania is better than Reading in California. It's not a very
not
a very high bar to pass. So Jake,
the only thing
Nate,
we have is the Reading Phillies.
Nate, you took David Johnson with the number one pick overall. Why don't you just give us a quick read of your mindset there?
Well, I mean, it's just going to be kind of a repeat of our whole fantasy show from a couple weeks ago, but I just felt like he was kind of the safest bet. I've had a history of number one picks in fantasy sports, and I always tend to take the wrong guy. Pretty much always. They always have a down season, it seems like, or they get hurt. You know, I may have luck with some of my other picks and things turn out okay, but for some reason, when I get that number one pick, hardly ever does it turn out very well for me. So I thought hard about taking Antonio Brown. And I had the number one pick in one of my leagues last year, and I took Antonio Brown, and it worked out fine. I ended up getting second place in that league. So that was fine. But David Johnson was just Mr. Steady. The guy plays all the time. He gets all the carries. He gets, you know, five to seven throws a game. You know, in our PPR league, I just think you're looking at a beast and a guy who scores 25 every week. So, you know, the other guys just, there's a little bit too much risk.
Makes sense. So, JP, with the number two overall pick, you took Antonio Brown. You want to give us a quick rundown of your thought process?
Yeah, I was looking at that. I'm looking at the running backs and receivers. Now, the thing that worries me about that pick is now he has Martavis Bryant on the other side now. Does that put down his production this year that I should be worried about overtaking Le'Veon Bell, who we know is injury-prone a little bit? I mean, he's had knee injuries. I wanted to sell the stock on Antonio because I think Big Ben is going to – Martavius running down the field is going to open up Antonio Olivan field. And then I went – my next two picks, I went to youth movement with Christian McCaffrey and Cook. I think the youth movement and running backs is where the league is going right now. It's going to be all youth. They're going to be used up fast and so on and so forth. So, you know, I kind of want a different strategy this year, and I think that strategy might work. It's a work in progress. We're going to see. I think Christian and Dalvin Cook, you're going to have good years, and I think Antonio's going to have good years, you know. And I took the second best quarter or third best quarterback in the draft, you know, Drew Brees. So, I'm really happy with what I selected. I did a little abstract. I think you all noticed that when I was drafting. I couldn't hear some of your guys' picks. That's why I did say a couple names that were already picked. I apologize. You guys cut out. I had my earpieces in. You guys just cut out.
It was amazing that you actually thought Odell Beckham Jr. was available in the fifth round.
No, the worst part was I'm standing at my friend's house, and I said, look at this draft board and look at my list because I'm marking off guys with highlighters. I'm like, do you see Odell Beckham Jr. anywhere on this draft board? He's like, no. I'm like, I don't either. And we're looking up and down like going, wait a second. I'm like, how did this happen? Did something happen to Odell? And we just missed it in the middle of the page.
So, I know, it was just humorous when it happened.
No, it was humorous. It was humorous. But I like the way I drafted. Like I said, I'm going with the youth movement. That seems to be the way of the last 2 years with Gurley, sophomore slump, Ezekiel, who knows, sophomore slump. We got two great studs now. You know, they're coming into the league. The youth movement may be the way to go.
Interesting stat or question this is only the second season in Le'Veon Bell's career that he has been available in week one. So there's a little fantasy tidbit for you.
Yeah.
Le'Veon did go third in our draft, followed by Jordy Nelson making a jump up, which meant
Julio
Jones
that one,
at number five. So that was kind of a no-brainer.
The Nelson pick really surprised me.
Me too. Who did you take at five?
I took Julio Jones at number five. I felt like he was a top three pick that fell to me.
Why did you take Julio Jones over, let's say, a LeSean McCoy or an A.J. Green or a Mike Evans? Why Julio?
I thought Julio has the most raw talent, and that if any other parts of the Falcons team on offense suffers, I think Julio is the most likely to retain his value. So that's just it. You know, it's just kind of one thing that one of the guys who's won a lot of our league has said is in fantasy football, you've got to have that guy who can be coming on Monday night and score 50 points to win you the game. And Julio Jones is a guy who can score you 50 points. So that's why I took him.
Yep.
First round pick.
No,
take a guy who can do it.
Yes.
No, I actually like that pick. I like that pick because if you look at Mike Evans now, Mike Evans always been – I picked him the last 2 years, and I've had great results. But he has DeSean Jackson now on that team where Winston can air that ball out now. Mike Evans might take a step back a little bit in receptions because of Deshaun.
Well, he's got two good tight ends, too.
He does. He has
a
lot of options now.
A stable of running backs. They're definitely a formidable offense.
Yes.
They are. I would think there's the concern that maybe Mike Evans doesn't get as high a number of touchdowns as he's gotten in the past.
Sure.
Right. No, you're 100% right on that. Because in the past, I might have taken Mike Evans over Julio just because Matt Ryan likes to spread the ball out everywhere. But this year with Deshaun and his tight ends and everybody, I would have took Julio over Mike Evans. And we always thought Mike Evans was an underrated player.
Nate, your next two picks, you took Amari Cooper and Jarvis Landry, and you took them ahead of, I just want to make sure that, you know, kind of give a context, Dez Bryant, Doug Baldwin, Brandon Cooks, Terrell Pryor, Alshon Jeffrey, T.Y. Hilton, and DeAndre Hopkins. So you took him, you took both of those players kind of highly, or kind of accelerated value over all those players, and I just wanted to kind of give you, or have you give us your thoughts on that.
Sure. So, well, I was wanting to get Christian McCaffrey with that second pick, and JP took him right before me.
I've blown a couple picks from you in the past.
Yeah, that was definitely my pick. So that threw a loop a little bit because I was going to go to running backs. But that being said, I really like Amari Cooper this year. I think he and Crabtree just form a great tandem there, and that's a high-scoring offense. I think Carr takes another step forward. I think he's a top 5 or 6 quarterback in the league, and I think that's just going to be, a high-scoring offense. So I really like Amari Cooper. I actually had him.
Nate, you're kind of cutting out. Can you try and get in a better spot there?
Sorry, I had Amari Cooper better. Was either 6. He was either 6 or 7 on my board overall at receiver. So I was happy to get him where I got him. And then the Jarvis Landry pick was based on just a hunch. I have a feeling that Cutler's going to have a nice year, a real big year. And I think Jarvis Landry is an explosive player down there. I don't think Ajayi is very good. I think Devontae Parker is going to have a nice year, but he's going to open things up for Jarvis, who's kind of more of the deep threat. I don't know. I don't like a lot of those other guys you mentioned had way more risk for me. DeAndre Hopkins, who had a big down year last year. Baldwin, for me, I don't like Russell Wilson. I don't think he's going to be that good. So I didn't trust that. I didn't trust the Andrew Luck situation. That's why I didn't take T.Y. Hilton. So I guess that was really – those were the kind of safe picks for me. And I wanted Jarvis Landry, and I didn't think he was going to be there, 20 picks later. So –
no, there's always that risk. If you don't take who you want, when you have a chance, you may not be able to take them at all.
Yeah, Brandon Cooks was a thought. I did really highly consider him over Landry. I had to think about that. In fact, I think I took my time talking on that Thursday, and I was back and forth between Brandon Cooks and Jarvis Landry, but ended up going with Jarvis. So.
Excellent, excellent. I decided to punt the tight end position and try and build up my depth at flex. I ended up getting in the last 4 rounds Martellus Bennett and Jason Witten. Do you think I have a capable starting tight end for every week in the NFL?
Yeah, but are you going to start the correct one?
Always a question. Always a question.
Yes, it is. But, yeah, I mean, I think Bennett's a nice weapon there. You know, he's going to be kind of what he has been in the past. He'll have some 25, 30-point games, and then he'll have a couple 3 to 5-point games. So it's just about picking the right guy in those matchups.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Was there any pick that really shocked you in terms of where that player's taken that you can remember?
You know, nothing comes to mind for me, but one of my picks, I don't know, I can't say that I was super surprised, but Allen Robinson, I think I got him in the 7th round, I want to say. I was really surprised. 6th round. I was really surprised that he was still there that late.
I was too. I think that came from all the chaos going on in Jacksonville has made it hard for people to trust that he's going to have a good enough year. And at a wide receiver 3, that's a good risk because that's your flex position and you're going to have a lot of options to put there. You know, I kind of went that same route as I went receiver heavy. There's someone in our league who has won the title a lot of times. So I decided to try that theory out. I got Julio Jones, then Todd Gurley, then Doug Baldwin, and then Demaryius Thomas. and I ended up taking Emmanuel Sanders a couple of picks later. I figure at least one of the Broncos receivers will have 1,000 yards and, you know, 6 or 7 touchdowns, because that's what they've had, at least one guy do that each of the last, like, 3 seasons or 4 seasons. I'm thinking if I can just pick the right flex player out of that, and then having Doug Baldwin and Julio Jones as my 1-2 and Gurley as my RB1, that I should have a pretty solid lineup at going out there. But, you know, there's always the fear that, you know, catch somebody or multiple players on a down year, which is certainly something I've been able to do in the past. So,
yeah.
JP, was there
Yeah, another one that did surprise me, Mark, was LeSean McCoy falling out of the first round.
He fell all the way to the first
pick
in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely surprised me, because I had him as, I think, my third running back on my board.
Right. Yeah, Devontae Freeman went ahead of him, as well as Ezekiel Elliott went in the 9th pick, and that was before we knew about the injunction. I actually took Ezekiel Elliott number 5 in my other draft, but that was the day that the judgment was handed out, and I figured that there was almost no chance it didn't go to arbitration.
Right.
But, and then Melvin Gordon and Jay Ajayi went before LeSean McCoy. So it just goes to show you that people either, A, just don't trust him, or just don't trust the Bills, and I'm not sure which one it is. He does get the injury of his hammy injury.
Interesting.
Can I weigh in on this one? LeSean McCoy is actually getting older. He is injury-prone with a hamstring. I think he dropped because of that, and Tyrod Taylor and the concussion in a contract year. I don't see the production coming out of him this year.
Yeah, okay. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I just don't know.
Boy, was he good last
I don't know what that
year,
team's
though.
Doing.
He was, and I'm not going to take anything away from him, because he's a Philly boy. Thank you very much.
No,
and,
it's all about his hamstring. It's all hamstring.
Yeah, it
his
really
hamstrings
is.
Stay. He plays a whole season. He'll be good. He's never not been a good player when he's out there. It's just how many games does he play.
Exactly. And I think this year might be a hamstring year, just because that offense is not going to be very good. In my opinion.
You know, Rob Gronkowski seems to always go healthy year, sick year, healthy year, sick year. Last year was a sick year with injuries. Do you think that Gronk gets through – let's say does he play a total of 14 games this season?
Well, Gronk didn't look like himself in the Thursday night game, obviously. They had problems. I think Gronk gets off the cobwebs and gets back into full form here, you know, game 2. I think Gronk will make it through the season this year, because they're going to use him a little bit less, because they have a lot more talent, well, not knowing what Amendola's injury is. But Cook's being there, and it's next man up for the Patriots. I think he's going to have a better season, and I think they're going to use him a little bit less, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, but, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the Patriots. I mean, I don't think we saw what they really were on Thursday night.
No.
What a crazy thing it would be if we saw kind of the changing of the guard from the Patriots to someone else in the football league.
Right. And the changing guard could be the Steelers. That's your Super Bowl pick. I did pick the Patriots and the Packers, but you picked the Steelers, I think, and who did you pick, Mark? You picked Steelers and...
I think I picked the Seahawks or the Packers.
Yeah, Seattle, yeah. No, you picked Steelers and Seattle. I didn't see, Nate, who you picked.
For the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Patriots, Seahawks.
Okay, there you go. So we're all kind of on the same wavelength here.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like there's going to be a whole lot of surprises. I think the biggest surprise is who gets the second wild card in the NFC and who wins
the AFC West
are the biggest questions.
Yes.
I'll give you my big surprise. It's going to be the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah,
Nate,
that's
a great point. That's a great point. And it's not San Diego, it's Los Angeles Chargers.
Oh, thank you. You're right. It is Los Angeles.
I think you have to throw a dollar into the swear jar or something. I have no idea.
I definitely do. That dollar to the douchebag jar.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I just got a feeling, man. I got a feeling. Big year in L.A. coming. I think the Raiders take the division, but
yeah,
now with the Barry injury, I think that's going to hurt Kansas City.
Of course.
I think San Diego, that front seven is good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Bosa's great.
And their two corners are pretty good. So, and we've seen what that offense can do if Keenan Allen's healthy and Melvin Gordon does what he did last year or even close to it.
Right, right.
You know, Hunter Henry, they've got some good receivers. So I think they're going to, you know, show the Broncos the business on Monday night. So
all these Bronco haters just trying to put them down.
They're like my second favorite team. I love the Broncos. But I already put money down. I've already got money down on the Chargers. So
what's the spread?
I went with the Sawbuck on the Chargers already. So
what's the spread on it?
I think the Broncos were favored by, I want to say, 1.5.
Oh, that's it. Oh, my God.
Broncos are favored by 3 right now.
3. Okay.
At home, favored by 3.
Now that you say 3, I think I got 2.5 when I placed.
I'll tell you what, Nate. I like your bet even more.
With the Chargers,
yeah.
I mean, 2.5. Two and a half is a great bet because I could see 3 points being the win. I just think that San Diego is going to run into the problem of they're a passing first offense and the Broncos are a pass first defense, and I think they just kind of play into the Broncos' strength. But you know, you never know. That's why they play the games. So you know, was there anything else you guys wanted to cover before we run out of time? We're down about 3 minutes or so.
Well, I've got an answer for the trivia question if you guys want to make
excellent.
A stab at it.
JP, you want to take a guess?
I was going to say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay. Mark?
And I would say, I think we might have talked about this before because I feel like the answer is David Robinson.
That's
okay,
a good guess.
You guys are both, you're both wrong, but you're on the right track. It is a center. And it's Hakeem the Dream.
Oh,
okay.
Go Hakeem.
Yes.
I do believe that both Robinson and Kareem. Kareem, I'm not sure about, but I'm pretty sure Robinson did have one. But Hakeem the Dream had two.
Two. And that's probably about in the 92 season or 93 season.
I had to make a guess,
it's probably 92, 93.
Yeah, I know he had two in his career. That's all I know.
Yeah, no. That's a really good trivia question.
He's the only guy that's ever done it, so.
Wow. I don't think I realized it was that rare.
It's pretty rare, yeah.
I just thought,
it's got to be. It's up there with, you know, four homers in a game or a perfect game.
Oh, yeah.
Triple play, unassisted triple play. You know, it's up there with all those.
Yeah, it's like an unassisted triple play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the closest correlation I can think. But, all right, well, great question. That was a tough one, but I'll bet a lot of guesses were in the same vein as our own. You look at the centers or the power forwards. Because
– of course.
You would think blocks would be the stat that you could kind of get. So
yeah, I know there's been a couple guys that have done it with steals.
Steals seems almost impossible. 10 steals in a game.
10.
I mean, wow. Without getting like 6 fouls to knock you out, you know, would be tough. But you know, that's why they're the professionals. All right, well, anybody have any wild predictions for tomorrow's opening NFL Sunday?
I predict the Chicago Bears almost beat the Falcons.
Almost. Well, hold on. That's not a prediction. You said almost.
Well, they're gonna blow it at the end, but it's gonna be
okay.
Yeah.
With all the Zeke Elliott hype, I'm gonna go with the Giants over the Cowboys.
Cover the spread. So.
Let's see.
Cowboys.
Biggest upset. I would see. I think the Redskins are going to beat the Eagles. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think there's any big upsets. Anyway, we're down to just a couple of seconds here. I want to thank everyone for being on the show. Remember, you can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at SPT Offensive. And you can also check out our show on Blog Talk, TuneIn, iTunes, and iHeartRadio On Demand. Thanks, everyone. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you, Mark, for hosting the show and Offensive Al.